Welcome to this week's edition of Dugout Dish Podcast. I am Andy Kirikides, joined by my wonderful co-host, Keith Glasser. How are we doing?
Great. How are you?
Doing good. Got a topic that was spurred by a tweet, very thoughtful tweet. So we're going to tackle travel baseball, its current state of affairs, and we're also going to talk a little bit about some things to consider when you are selecting a travel team, as well as exposure in terms of when and where and how it is important and when it becomes important. So we're going to take a little bit. We're going to unpack this one. I think there's a couple different directions we might end up going, but certainly I have some thoughts on the current state of travel baseball. This is not an indictment on any organization or anything like that. It's more of a current state of affairs, if you will, and talk through how travel ball has gotten to where it is now. It plays a really important role in the recruiting process. It certainly has its flaws, but I think we'll get to some important topics here, some important information, some things that I think that families can really think about, as this is kind of the time of the year where you're starting to think about what travel organization you're going to play for next summer, so on and so forth. So hopefully you guys get something out of it. Once again, we're not here to blast anybody. This is more just a general conversation of how things are, and we'll be open and honest like we always are. So where do you want to start with this one here, Coach?
I guess we can start with the actual word travel ball. You know, I think, you know, when we grew up and when we started doing this, or we started playing, and we went through our recruiting process and such. And when you played travel baseball, like, you legitimately traveled to a ton of places to compete and play baseball. You know, I've mentioned this on here before. You know, I played for the South Shore Dodgers in upstate New York, and you know, we would go into Connecticut and Rhode Island and Massachusetts, and obviously all over the state of New York. We'd go down to Jersey and Virginia and Maryland. You know, there were a lot of places that this game had taken me long before I even set foot on a college campus. And I think that in some regards, you know, for us, it was great, right? You know, think about how many guys, and I'm not just going to name drop a ton of guys, but, you know, between the two of us, there's a lot of professional and big league baseball players that we played against at the high school level, you know, albeit in tournaments or travel baseball, you know, playing the Virginia Barnstormers and the Midland Redskins and the Florida Bombers, who have, you know, since become a different team, the Long Island Titans, the Brooklyn Youth Service of the world, Team Connecticut Baseball, TCB. I'm going to drop some of those. But, you know, if you're not familiar with some of these organizations, because some of them don't exist anymore, some do, but you can kind of go look up, you know, go look up Brooklyn Youth Service and who played for them, the Bayside Yankees and who played for them. You look up the Dodgers and see who played for them. The Barnstormers, Midland Redskins have, like, there's a lot of big leaguers who played there. But my point in saying this is that, you know, that the I think the idea behind travel ball originally, when this kind of happened, was that they wanted to take some of the best players from a certain area and go tee it up against play the best players from another area. And you saw how it shook out. You wanted to see who was going to be the guy, like what teams were the best, what guys were the best, and where you could go from there. And I think that in a lot of regards, and there's a lot of reasons for this as to why this happened, and we're not going to get into every single one of them, but, you know, like, travel ball has moved away from that notion of going and playing really good competition and seeing where the chips fall and who is the better team. You know, I think in some of the tournaments, you can probably argue that happens a little bit, but, you know, at the end of the day, and this is not an indictment on anyone, like, it's generally the bigger organizations that are going to win those tournaments because they have a ton of guys that they can throw on rosters. You know, it's not a one team organization that has a bunch of really good players that's going to go compete against everyone like it was 20, 25, 30 years ago. And I don't want to sound like an old guy just banging my head against the wall about, you know, this is, you know, this is the new wave. And, but, you know, the, I think in this, you know, I think development lacks. I think there's less games being played. There's a lot less actual baseball coaching going on. You know, and I also think that there's, you know, there's as college coaches, we have allowed this to happen because we show up at the baseball heavens and the Diamond Nations and the NEBCs and the Georgias and the Lake Points and the, you name it, out there complexes, because a lot of us have limited recruiting budgets and it's an opportunity to be able to see a ton of student athletes, potential student athletes play for a lot cheaper than going and chasing some teams around that have good players and sitting on those games and find the players that way. You know, and that's, it's gotten away from that, right? And like, it's the same argument, I think, that you, if you trace it, it went from Legion ball to travel ball. And now we're into whatever this is now. And there is a movement to try to bring Legion ball back, but this is the same kind of problem. Like, you know, you have a bunch of people who might not necessarily want to, like, who just want to play baseball, but don't necessarily want to play competitively. You know, and you have to also mix in your house and rec leagues, and, you know, you can call it travel ball, but it's not really travel if you're just staying in your same region and locality, you know, and if you want to play college baseball, you need to go see what it's like to play against other kids who want to play college baseball. And if you're just going to go be the big fish in the small pond, you're in for a rude awakening, because there's not going to be a lot of people who are going to come watch you play. Not a lot of people are going to want to come, are going to be calling. And then you're going to be left asking, why am I not getting recruited? Well, you're not playing against anybody. You're not getting out and being seen either. You know, so it's a double-edged sword that way. But I think, you know, the point of the tweet that we're referring to was more like, is talking about the development side and, you know, the travel side of, you know, like, it's just kind of become tournaments. There's not really a clash of the titans, if you will, where you'd go play some weekends and you'd play against some really good competition and some really good players and kind of see how it shakes out. And, you know, there'd be college guys littered all over the field, and it was a little bit more of a litmus test as to whether or not you could pass that test to be able to have a floor of playing college baseball. Because if you were just going to get blown up and not find success, it was pretty easy to kind of decipher, like, these are the things I need to get better at in order to play in college. Or, you know what? I'm doing pretty well for myself. I got to continue to get better, but, like, I'm doing okay. And, you know, with the amount of teams and the amount of players and the amount of coaching, and I'm not, again, I don't want to disparage any of the coaches, but, like, how many of these people are really, really good at coaching and developing and doing those things? Like, I know there's guys out there that are good, but, you know, I've said this before, if your full-time job is being a plumber, and there's nothing against plumbers, my grandfather was a plumber, but if you're spending the vast majority of your time doing that and you're developing guys based off of what you learned in high school 35 years ago, the game has changed. It's far different. You know, and I think that there's that aspect to it too, of just starting teams and having people that don't necessarily have the most up-to-date information from a development standpoint that have kind of made it a little bit less, I don't want to say desirable. What's the word I'm looking for, Andy? A little bit, you know, put this in a spot where it's not as good as I think it could be. How's that? Is that a better phrasing?
Yeah, it's probably not as productive as it could be. And I think, you know, you got these travel ball organizations, and let's not sugarcoat it. Like, for some of these organizations, it is very much a business. And it's, how many teams can we fill? How many kids can we get in a uniform? And we'll get them to some tournaments. And, you know, some of those teams, to be honest with you, they don't really care about. They just need those guys in the uniform, and they go and play, and they're able to say that they fulfilled their their promise of being able to put them in uniform and get them into some tournaments and all that kind of stuff. And like, there is that, like, there's no denying it. I mean, you have, when you have teams that have, or when you have organizations that have 20, 30 teams across the country, it's tough to say that that particular organization is totally bought into every single one of those teams. It's really hard. But I think what you're getting at around the productivity piece, or is desirable, is that there's not a lot of practicing going on. There's not a lot of actual coaching. And these are generalizations. So if you're a travel ball coach and you're listening to this and you're saying, well, that's not me, well, then good. You're a part of the solution. So don't get butthurt if you know, by what we're saying, because we are making some generalizations. But as a whole, it has gone to how many games can you pack into a weekend, and then we'll reconvene the following Friday. And there's not a ton of development work going on. It's more supervision of players and going through the process of writing a lineup versus taking the time to have a practice on a Tuesday and help these kids get a little bit better. Like, a lot of that stuff has been outsourced to different hitting coaches and pitching facilities. And like, hey, they have their place. And some of those places are as well known as they are for a reason, because they get really, really good results. And I have nothing against those guys. I think they're a really important part of the development piece. But from a travel ball perspective, it definitely has gone away from the development portion. And the development portion feeds into the ability to play in college, because most 15-year-olds aren't good enough to play in college yet. So the development portion becomes really, really important. And yeah, there's a showcase portion of it. There's an exposure portion of it that is important. When that is important and who you do it with and where you are is really what is impactful in terms of, from the exposure perspective, like, especially with the new rules, if you're a 15U, you want to make sure you're an organization that fits what you need right now, and that you're not dishing out thousands and thousands of dollars to travel all over the country just to say that you played in these tournaments when it may not be the right thing for you, because you need to focus on developing. You need to focus on getting better. And, you know, flying to Georgia four times during the summer, you know, and spending $6,000-$7,000 a trip, and I might be lowballing that. Is that the best use of your money and time, when maybe that's the time when you should play for a team that doesn't travel quite as much, but they play a bunch of games and they practice? Maybe that's the best path forward. And I think sometimes the current state of travel baseball has sucked people into this notion that they need to wear a certain uniform and they need to play for a certain organization in order to get recruited. At the end of the day, the people you're around in the development process is going to be way more important than the jersey you wear. Yeah, if you play for Canes National and you play for their big boy team, yeah, you're going to get recruited. But those guys are playing there for a different reason, right? Almost every one of those kids has been committed as early as possible. Like, they're playing for a different reason than the kid who's trying to find his way into college baseball. It's a completely different path. It is not the same battle that they're fighting. And I think as a parent going through it, you need to really think about what's best for your son in the moment. And I think that that's hard sometimes, because it's easy to get drawn into, well, this team wears this uniform, so I should go play for them, because it's going to mean I'm going to play in college. Well, if you're not a college player, it doesn't matter what team you play for. You need to be good enough first. So having that honest conversation and making sure that you're using the travel ball world to your advantage, and that you're not wasting time and money because you're pursuing something that you don't really fully understand how it works.
Right. You know, I think there's a lot more too, right? You have you have people that are coaching that do want to win pretty much at all costs. And you run into things, and I've seen this, like, I've seen teams have like six pitchers for a weekend, and they just roll guys out for like 120 pitches for all four games or whatever it is. And like you start, like there starts to become questions of like, what are we doing here? You know, if we don't have enough arms and we're just rolling our arms and climbing pitch counts and doing all this stuff, like there becomes a safety component there. You know, and the other part is, you know, and again, as college coaches, we're the problem because we continue to show up to these events. But, you know, how many guys do you know that are like stay through the championship series for everything?
Almost never. I don't really want to see a kid throw on. I don't want to see a kid throw 60 pitches on Thursday and then see him again on Sunday. Like,
you don't right. Well, you know what I mean? Like how many championship, like of all the tournaments you ever went to as a college recruiting at Vassar, William & Mary, I did it for 15 years. I can count on one hand the amount of times I stayed to watch a championship game at 9:30 on a Sunday night or a Monday night.
I don't think
I'll be honest with you, it's zero.
Because yeah, I don't think I ever stuck around to watch the championship of the, you know,
you've probably seen everything that you need. Yeah, like you've seen everything that you need to see. And you know, at the end of the day, especially if you're at down in Georgia, like, and even if you're at Diamond, if you're at the Super 17 at Diamond Nation, or you're at the Boston Open, like, there's a lot of driving going on. Not necessarily Diamond Nation, but in some regards, you know. But those are long days. You're starting at 8, and you might not be leaving the field till 10 o'clock at night. And you can see a bunch of stuff, and you might, you know, you can't stay for the championship game because you got to be somewhere else 3.5 hours away the following morning or whatever it is, and you're not going to be there to see it. So by and large, a lot of like, and look, I'm sure there's coaches out there that'll stay because they want to say they see it, and like, that's fine, whatever works for you from a recruiting standpoint. But the vast majority of college coaches aren't going to stick around to watch the championship game on Sunday night at 12 o'clock. Like, not gonna happen. Unless they're really bearing down on a guy and they need to make a decision right then and there. You know, so like the idea that like winning some of these tournaments, like, yeah, it's awesome. Like, you know, Pete, like we want to recruit winners, but on the same hand, like, you know, at what cost? And it, like, there's, when you do this long enough, you're going to be able to make a decision and see as much as it is that you need to see in a short window of time, because you have a lot of other guys that you need to see as well. So, like, yeah, that team might be in the championship, but if you watch them play 3 games on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and you watch 12 at-bats and you already made the decision on a guy, like, your decision is going to be changed by what you're going to see in another 2 or 3 at-bats that weekend.
No.
So,
absolutely. No, and the – I mean, we're getting into a little bit of a different area here, but I think it's completely relevant. And this is one of my issues I have with the way the travel ball is set up right now. It might be my biggest issue I have with it, is the way pitchers are handled. And there's two layers to this. One, there's a safety component, and I can't stand when you see a kid throw on a Thursday and he throws 60 pitches on a Thursday, and then the coach wants to bring him back on Sunday so they can win a consolation game. Like, that's not good for the kid. Mm-mm. There is no high school kid who is built to throw like a college bullpen guy. They don't get enough rest. They wonder why these kids break down. They wonder why these kids get hurt. And a lot of it has to do with the way these tournaments are set up, and you're jamming 6 games into 3 days, which is insane. The other part of it is from an evaluation perspective.
Hold on. Let's just unpack that for 2 seconds.
Yeah. I know where you're going with this, and hit him with it.
Because you're packing 6 games into 3 days, which if we talk about this from a college baseball standpoint, like, you're talking about a 4-team or 6-team conference tournament that's going to run Thursday to Saturday, Friday to Sunday, Thursday to Sunday with the rain day being Sunday, whatever, right? If you bounce yourself in a loser's bracket, like, yeah, you're coming back and you're playing a decent amount of games. College pitching staffs run out of pitching in conference tournaments when they have to do that. Like, unless you're a national organization, you cannot look me in the face and tell me you have enough quality pitching to safely throw all of these kids what they need to throw to get those innings. Now, understand, I get that you're playing 7-inning games and it's not a 9-inning game. Like, it doesn't sound like much, but those 2 innings, you know, over the course of a weekend, if you're playing six games, that's 12 innings. That's another two games that you would be playing if it's a 9-inning game. So I understand that aspect of it. But still, like, we're carrying, I say we're as if I'm still coaching, we were carrying, you know, 14 to 16 arms into that conference tournament, and we might run out of pitching. Like, you can't tell me that you have enough pitching to do it. And I think that that is something in, like, how many times when you're standing at, name the complex, at 9 o'clock at night, and you start talking to other coaches, you're like, yo, what are we doing here? Because we all know.
Yeah.
And again, I will readily admit we're part of the problem. We were part of the problem because we show up to the games. It's like Field of Dreams. If you build it, they'll come.
Yeah. It's 100% true.
But to your point, like, and that's what, like, I want to, like, put it in context of college. Like, you're right. Like, college baseball, unless you're in a conference tournament, and that's the only time that it's going to happen, that you would play that many games in a weekend. It's never going to happen at all. Like, you are, at most, you'll play four.
Yeah.
On a regular, on what would be a college weekend. And that's only going to be early in the year, where you might play Friday night, double Saturday, single Sunday. And then it's not going to happen again until you get into a conference tournament. And even then, now it's set up to where, you know, the bigger conferences are brilliant because, and I'm getting away from the crux of the matter, but from an explanation standpoint, they all play pool play to climb their RPIs. Brilliant move. And they don't play as many games. And it doesn't matter. Because if you lose, well, we lost to the number five RPI. Our RPI is going to climb. So it doesn't matter. And like, but that's not happening in travel baseball, is my point.
Yeah, and I'll get to the second point of this. But it's kind of a catch-22 because you want kids to compete and you want kids to win, right? Mm-hmm. You want kids to want to win. And, like, winning is important. Like, don't get it twisted. Like, that was what we did for 26 years, is you try to win, and you try to win any way you possibly can within the boundaries of the rules. But travel organizations are trying to win these tournaments at the expense of the kids. And that's a problem. Like, winning the Super 17 at Diamond Nation doesn't mean shit. It doesn't. And to your point, if you're going out of the Worldwood Bat in Georgia, there's like 10 teams in the country that can win that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because the Canes show up with, and there's other teams like the Canes. I'm just using them because everybody knows who they are. The Canes show up with 14 ACC and SEC position players, and then they got 14 arms that can all go four innings at a pop. Nobody's throwing. Those guys, they are not taking Florida State's number one arm and throwing him on Thursday for 60 pitches and then bringing him back on Monday night so he can throw another 40 out of the bullpen so they can win the they're not doing that because they got to answer for it. So they're equipped for it. These other teams that have good players and they're trying to win these things, you can't sacrifice the health of the kids. The other thing, from a coach's perspective, and this always broke me about these tournaments and it sucked, is that, hey, he's going to throw two innings in this game, and then we're going to try to bring him back on Sunday. It's like, and I'm thinking to myself, like, shit, man, can't you just throw him for four so I can get a legitimate look at him? Like, you know, I want to see the kid compete. Like, I want to see him get in a jam. I want to see him, can you hold velocity through 70 pitches? You know, what happens to you when you get a little bit tired? And that's all. So in a weird way, you're sacrificing the health of the kid to try to win a tournament. But I could make a legitimate argument that you're actually selling the kid short from an evaluation perspective, because now he can't prepare. You can't get on a normal freaking schedule throwing if you throw twice every weekend. You can't have a good week to build up to your start like you would do for any college pitcher. There's no consistency.
Well, and to your point earlier about not practicing, like, What's your bullpen schedule and stuff look like in between those starts?
Zero consistency.
And, you know, and then you wonder why when you show up and, you know, hey, he's 3-6 and you show up and he's 2-4. Well, you know, he's been throwing a lot. Well, that's whose fault is that?
Yeah. No, you're
because they're like, there's, you know, it at some point the adults need to be the adults. And sometimes, you know, you have to take the L in order to protect the kids, you know, like, and it happened when I, you know, it happened when I coached. Like, there's been plenty of times in my career where you had to sit somebody down to protect them from themselves. Like, yeah, they want the ball. Yeah, they want to be out there. But it's not in the best interest of the kid, nor is it in the best interest of the team to have them doing out there, because they can further injure themselves, which then puts them out longer. Or they're like, they're playing at 50% and, you know, that they're not going to be able to do enough to help you win. And if you give them a week off, they can recover better and then be able to come back at 100% and play and be a lot better for you. And you just keep tearing it down the line. And I think that, like, we lose sight of that at the level, because, like, there is, you know, the exposure piece is a giant piece of the travel ball world. Like, that's why people want to go to these tournaments. That's why they want to do all this stuff. But then, you know, again, to your point, like, hey, he's only going to throw two innings here, and then we're going to hope to bring him back. Well, if you don't bring him back, like, and this is like the other part that I was trying to get to earlier too, and I don't necessarily know if I did a great job. Like, our schedules from, you know, your recruiting schedule is kind of set up. I mean, it fluctuates week to week, but, you know, depending on what you need to see. But if I'm going to a tournament and I'm going to be there Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and I have an event that I have to be at on Sunday, well, that's great, man. If you bring him back on Sunday, like, I'm not going to get to see him. And, you know, whether you do or not, I'm not here. And, you know, if he's really bad for two innings or doesn't really do, like, doesn't show me enough, like, I can go find another guy who's 3-5. And, you know, to your point, you are doing the kid a disservice in doing it that way, because you're not giving them a fair shake to be able to be evaluated. Like, you show up on Sunday to the event you're planned to being at and see five guys that are 83-85 and watch them throw four innings and like three of those guys better than the guy you liked on Thursday. And who knows, maybe if he did throw four innings, you like that kid more. But you don't get to get enough of an evaluation in two innings. And same thing when they, you know, when they flip position guys in and out and do this stuff. Like, you know, you go and, like, it's subjective when you're watching, let's call it infielders, because they could not get a ball hit to them for a while. But if they're on the field for only three innings, they might not get a ball hit to them at all. And you can't, like, you know, what am I going to do? Evaluate you off the brown balls that the first baseman's rolling to you in between innings? Like, you know, what kind of evaluation is that?
Yeah, it doesn't do anybody any good. And, like, if you're a travel ball coach listening to this, or if you're a parent, like, this is some of the stuff that you need to, and we'll talk about this, but, like, this is some of the stuff that you need to think about. Like, this is coming from two guys who did this for 26 years. We're not two talking heads who haven't done this. They have never been on the other side of this. Like, protect the kids and give them the best chance. You want them to get the recruited. It's not about how many times they throw in a weekend. It's about them being prepared to throw well when it's time for them to throw. And if that means that you tell a kid on Monday, you're throwing on Saturday, which is another pet peeve of mine, is that kid won't find out he's throwing until 48 hours before his start. It's like, come on, man, give that kid a chance to prepare. Because if you know on Monday that you're going to throw on Sunday or you're going to throw on Friday, like, your whole week of preparation changes. Your bullpen day changes, when you long toss changes, how much you throw in between changes, your conditioning, your lifting. Like, you want to put these kids in a good situation to perform, give them lead time and give them the ball and let them pitch. And I understand there's extenuating circumstances sometimes, right? But if you do that enough, that kid will shine and coaches will show up because he's good enough. But if the kid's velocity is down because he's tired, he's not going to get recruited anyways. So you're really hurting the kid, and you're putting him in a situation where if you ask them to throw twice a week and you do it for 6 weeks during the summer, it may not bite him then, but at some point it's going to set him back. And that's the worst thing that can happen for a kid, is being on the shelf. And I understand injuries happen and you can do everything perfect and still get hurt. I get that. I understand. But you want to stack the chips in the favor of the kid as much as you can. And preparation is such a key piece of that. And, you know, these same coaches talk about preparation and routine and how they go about their business on the, like, give these kids a chance to do that and make sure, like, if you need to have one less team, or you need to have three or four extra pitchers on a particular team in order to do that successfully, maybe that's something guys should think about. Because I want to see, if I'm a college coach, I want to see a kid perform when he's ready to pitch, right? I want to see the kid who had a week to prepare. I want to see what he can show me. I don't want to have to guess and get some excuse. Oh, well, you know, he threw at a camp on Wednesday and we brought him back on Saturday. Like, that's a you problem. Maybe you should have given him another day's rest. Give these kids a chance to be good.
Yeah. And I think that it's, you bring up an interesting point, because it's difficult to navigate in today's recruiting world where you are playing tournaments and there are camps and showcases that kids are going to and the like. And I think that it can get difficult because, you know, everyone's heard the horror stories of, you know, the coaches that, you know, they don't want you to go to the showcases and tournaments and this, that, and the other thing. But, you know, there's something to be said if you're a kid who wants to go play in the Ivy League or the Patriot League or the NESCAC, and you're going to tournaments with your travel team and none of those coaches are ever at those tournaments, then you're not doing yourself any favors by not getting in front of those coaches. So your other option is to go to a private showcase or go to their own camp, where you want to make sure that you're in your best shape to be able to show them that you're, to give the best account of yourself to be able to be evaluated by them and potentially be recruited. And I think that there's, you know, it's a hard thing to navigate, but it's doable, to your point, if, you know, maybe instead of having 10 teams, you have 7 and there's more arms on teams, so that when you do get jammed up that way, it's not a detriment to all of the, you know, it's not a detriment to all the kids that are on that team, or the kids that, you know, are trying to get that fair shake. Cause there probably are kids on that team that are getting recruited by schools that are showing up to the games. But the likelihood of you being able to go to tournaments and having every single one of your kids who wants to play college baseball be evaluated by the schools that they want to go play at, like, I have to imagine that that's a very, very low percentage that's happening for. So they're going to have to supplement with something else. And if you're in it for the kids, you have to be flexible enough to allow them to be able to go do those things so that they can go out and hopefully get recruited by some of these schools that aren't able to go to these tournaments. You know, especially if you have a bunch of Division III kids, like the recruiting budgets at the Division III level are minuscule compared to that of the bigger schools and the Division I's. They don't have the money and resources to be able to go all over the country and see all the kids it is that they need to see. And if you're in the high academic world, forget about it, because you are recruiting the entire country. You can't jump a plane and go to California 4 or 5 times. You can't go down to Texas. You can't go down to Florida. You can't go down to Georgia. You know, you can pick one or two of those places, but for the most part, you can't go and see all these kids. So those kids have to come to you. And the coaches, the travel ball coaches and the high school coaches need to understand that that is the state of college recruiting right now. you have to be flexible to allow these kids to be able to be seen by the coaches they want to be seen by, or the coaches that are actively recruiting them. You know, if I'm recruiting you and I was at RPI and you're from Texas and I can't get to Texas, the only way for me to see you is for you to come to me. And if that interferes with something and I do like the kid, then, you know, that kid needs to make a decision. And it can't be a decision where they feel the pressure that they can't leave to go do something to be seen by a coach that's recruiting them that at a school that they want to go to, and be like, well, I'm getting pressure that I can't go. I've heard it. It's out there. I know it is. We all know it is.
100%.
But like, that's not in the best interest of the kid. So you can't tell me that you like, you know, I do it for the kids. And then when push comes to shove, you want them there so you can win a game. And it's the same for like these high school summer teams. You know, there's high schools out there that run summer teams and fall teams that don't, you know, the kids feel pressure to play with them because they want them, you know, whatever. They want their high school team to be good for the 15 to 16 games they play the following year. Like, you're doing the kids a disservice that do want to go play in college, because if you're just going to play locally, no one's going to come see them play. So then they have to go be seen. And if you're blowing them out on Wednesday and Saturday, and then they're trying to go to a camp the following Monday, like, they're going to be 80 to 82 when they're really 83 to 86. And they can't give their best fastball or account of themselves because you want a team build for your 15 games next April and May. You know, like, what are we doing?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, here's it after this statement, which I'm sure will ruffle some feathers, but we'll talk about some things to consider. Right. And like, things that parents and kids need to take into account when they're making these decisions on who they're going to play for. Cause there's some stuff that you absolutely need to consider. But if you play for a travel team and you're a Division III player and you go down to Georgia for the Worldwood Bat, you are wasting your time. You're not. It just basically, you're going down there you're spending a bunch of money to go to Georgia to play six games, probably get rained out twice, drive 5 or 6 hours while you're down there, and you're not going to get recruited, because unless it is a regional Division III team in the state of Georgia, South Carolina, like, and they're few and far between down there, they don't go. If you're a kid from the Northeast and you have dreams of playing in the NESCAC, they don't go down there. If you're a New Jersey kid and you're a Division III guy and you want to play in the NJAC, freaking great Division III baseball, Montclair State doesn't fly to freaking Georgia.
No, the Liberty League doesn't go to.
No.
I think for a little while there was a school or two that did, but that was extended
circumstances there. There's a lot of big time Division
I. The Suniac isn't flying down there. There's a lot of Division I schools that don't go.
Yeah, there's a lot of Division I schools specifically in the Northeast, because you have a bunch of states right next to each other, right? Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts. A lot of those guys won't go down because they recruit regionally anyways. Like, they won't go to Georgia because they're going to fly to Atlanta to watch the same teams that they watch all the time.
Right.
So, you know, yeah, there's some better competition down there, you could say, but I mean, at this point, that tournament has been watered down so much because there's almost 500 teams in it now. That leads us into the kind of the conversation here, which is, it always starts with a really good self-assessment. Understanding where you are in your timeline, where you are in terms of how you fit into college baseball. That's where the conversation starts, right? If you're 14U flying around the country to play in tournaments, unless you're playing for Team USA or something like that, but we're talking like the vast majority of kids, most 14U kids, you don't need exposure. Doesn't matter at all. Mm-hmm. It's about games now. And it's about development. As you get a little bit closer, which I would argue 16U is probably when you need to think about, am I playing for an organization that is going to help me, right? And a couple of things that come to mind when I think about, are they going to help you, is, do they practice? where do they play? And does that schedule line up with what you want out of it? Right. And this is where the assessment comes in. And it's really, really important is that you may want to play in the ACC, but if you're not an ACC player, playing down in the Carolinas may not be the best move for you. So, oh, well, they go to Cary. Well, that's great. But if you're not a guy who can play at a school who's going to be at Cary, don't be fooled by the flashiness of a schedule. Oh, well, they play in Hoover and they play in the BCS down in Florida and they go to the World of Bat and they got an invite to the PBR. It's like, that's great. But if you're not at that level or you don't want to play in that region of the country, that schedule doesn't help you. If you're from Texas and you have aspirations to play high academic Division III baseball in the Northeast and your travel team only plays in Texas, it ain't happening because they're never going to see you. So you got to have that really good self-assessment. And you got to look at where does this team play? Are they going to be in front of schools that I have interest in? And for the vast majority of kids, your recruiting experience is going to happen within 3 hours of home.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, if you're from Massachusetts, can you play in Virginia? Yeah, of course you can. There's a lot of great schools down in Virginia. But if you want to play in Virginia, you need to get to Virginia. And you need to make sure, because if you're not a top guy, George Mason's not driving up to you know, Massachusetts to go watch a kid. There's too many kids in Virginia. You know, if you want to play at a great school like Randolph-Macon, like Ray's not driving up to Boston to watch you throw. You need to come to him, to your point, just like you were talking about with RPI. So the self-assessment's always where it starts. We hammer that home, and it's the most important part of this process is being honest about where you fit and what you want. The second thing is when you're talking about these travel teams is make sure that the team that you're playing for plays in places that are going to be helpful in your recruiting process. Don't be fooled by, well, we play in these big tournaments. It only matters if you line up with the coaches that are going to really be at those places.
Yeah. You know, it's not, there is some truth, and you'll always hear it. Like, if you're good enough, they'll find you. Like, there is some truth to that. And we've talked about this a lot on here where, you know, Twitter and people you can work with and the internet and a lot of this stuff has allowed for the recruiting world to be shrunk a little bit. But at the end of the day, the coaches still want to make sure that you have the skill set to fit into their program, and they're going to want to see you play, whether or not it's in a tournament, a showcase, their camp, whatever it might be, you know. And I think that you need to be hyper aware of what that schedule looks like that you are playing for the team you're playing for. How does that help your recruiting process so that you can get recruited by the schools it is that you want to be recruited by? Because you're 1,000% right that you can just, you can go play all the flashy tournaments and not gain any traction because you're a D3 guy and there's not a lot of D3 guys, if any, at those tournaments. And you're going to get frustrated because it's like, well, we're going to all these places, there's college coaches, and I'm not getting any traction. Well, yeah, you're a 3.7, you're a 3.8 with a 14.20, and you want to major in engineering. There's been three college coaches who have seen you play that fit that academic profile in the school that you're looking for. And, you know, one's a service academy and two are, you know, high end Division I, and you're not that player. So you need to find out a way to figure out where you fit in and get in front of those coaches. And it might be that you have to do some extra stuff from a camp standpoint, or, you know, you might have to have a hard conversation with whoever runs your organization of like, hey, this is what I want to do. What do you know about this? Like, what coaches do you know in these areas and in these schools that you could help me get in front of? And if they don't know anyone, like, you need to have a hard conversation of like, well, I don't know, like, I'd love to stay here, but if, like, if you can't help me, then I don't know if this is the best place for me. And that's an okay conversation to have with people, because if they can't help you, then what are we doing? You're just going to spend a ton of money going around to all these tournaments and travel and food and hotels and everything else to not get seen by anybody it is that you want to be recruited by.
Yeah. At a certain point, you got to be selfish, like, especially if you're getting into that junior summer, right? The summer going into your senior year. Mm-hmm. You have to be selfish with your time, because if you don't go to where the coaches are, you can play for the schools that you're interested in, you're just wasting your time, period. And you have to be selfish to a certain extent when it comes to that, because if you're not in front of those guys, they're not going to get evaluated. And the best relationship ever with a coach may not get you a spot anywhere if they don't see you, because there's too many other good kids, right? And yeah, like, do we have guys that we can call where if we said, hey, man, this is a no-brainer, I don't know if you're ever going to see him, but I think you should take this kid. Do we know guys that will be like, yeah, tell him, like, we're good, let's do this? Yeah. It's not often that card gets used, because you don't ever want it to come to that.
Correct.
Because that kid should have a plan where the phone call is, hey, man, we think this kid's pretty good. How do we get him in front of you in the next 5 months? Because we got ahead of the game. Mm-hmm. And you're not scrambling in September trying to pull strings, trying to get some stuff done. So, yeah, to your point, they have to be able to help you. And if they can't, then you probably want to look somewhere else, right? Do they have a history of doing well with kids at multiple levels, right? Everybody wants to sell you on, well, we had this guy go to Virginia and this guy went to, those kids are easy.
Mm-hmm.
How many Division III guys do they have? How many guys going to play Division II? How many junior college guys? That's an organization that brings a ton of value, because what they're probably doing is they're probably not loading up their rosters. They're probably taking kids into their organization because they're doing something development-wise, and they're doing something from a recruiting perspective, or at least a showcase perspective, that is allowing these kids to get seen. And you're seeing kids on all ends of the college baseball spectrum being placed in different organizations. And that's an organization that's appealing if you're somebody who's trying to play college baseball and you're not a surefire Division I guy. Like, you need to be with somebody that's like, yeah, we've had guys go play in the SUNYAC. We've had guys play in the NESCAC, NJAC. We've had guys go play down in the ODAC or the Centennial Conference. Like, that's the type of place where you go, all right, these guys are working for all different kids. I think most organizations should be judged on that, and not how many superstars do you have, but how many kids did you get to college at any level?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I want to take it back just very quickly. You know, when we're talking about the self-assessment and all that stuff, you know, it's the same conversation. You know, if you're having a conversation with the coaches and you're saying like, well, I want to play at Wake Forest, and the coaches say like, you're not an ACC player, you have to take that and understand that, okay, I'm not an ACC player, so I need to adjust my expectations and what it is I'm doing. Like, where do you see me fitting in? And if they have a legitimate answer and they have a plan for you, then okay. But, you know, I think sometimes it can be hard if you're paying to play in this organization and then they tell you that you're not as good as you think you are. People get upset about that. And you have to understand that this is 7% are going to go play Division I, II, or III. It's like 2.2% are going to go play Division I, and it's wildly lower than that are going to go play in the ACC and the SEC. They're few and far between. And if someone is being honest with you and saying like, hey, you're a good baseball player, you could be a mid-major Division I guy, or you're a Division II or Division III guy, but you can't play in the SEC or the ACC, you have to take that feedback and not get super mad about it and adjust what it is you're doing in order to be able to be recruited to go play college baseball. And, you know, because I think that is the other side of the coin when we talk about whether or not they can help you out or not. Like, if they are helping and genuinely giving you honest feedback, you have to take that feedback. You can't just be like, well, you don't know what you're talking about. You know, I can't tell you how many people in my life that I've heard sit across from me and be like, well, you know, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. Okay, well, I can tell you for a fact that you've been seen by, you know, 250 Division I coaches. Not one of them is calling. So the market tells you what you are. And if the coaches who have seen a lot of these guys tell you you're not an ACC or SEC player, that's okay. You can still be a really good baseball player and develop and, you know, have a phenomenal career. But you need to adjust that and take that honest feedback and use it to craft your recruiting plan around the feedback it is that you're getting, whether it's from your coaches, people like us, whatever it is. But you have to take that and honestly sit with it and figure out what it is that you need to do in order to get to the level it is that you can play at.
I mean, just do the math. There's, you know, you talk about the Power Three now, Big 12, SEC, ACC. There's less than 500 kids that go on to campus for their first year moving forward in those three conferences.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not counting junior colleges, which a lot of those schools recruit out of junior college. So like you and might be looking at 350 to 400 high school kids who play in those conferences, those three conferences. It's a really elite group of players. And just because you're not one of those guys out of the high school doesn't mean that you're not good. And then we talk about it all the time. Division I baseball is not like football. There's a lot of schools who don't play in those conferences that are freaking legit. Go look at D1baseball.com's top 100 and tell me that you would have expected Fairfield and Columbia and Penn and Northeastern to be in that mix. Army, like most people have no clue how good those programs are. It's mm-hmm. because they think the only good baseball is the ACC, SEC, and the Big 12. And it's just not the case. So if that's the type of feedback that pisses you off and like either use it as power or like you need to really reassess how you take feedback, because to your point, the market is what the market says you are, right? You can want to play at those schools, but if those schools don't want you and they've seen you, then yeah, you can be pissed about it. That's fine. But like, you got to move on. It's a big reason that we like to have guys go to on-campus camps with guys that we know and trust, because we get that feedback and we get it early. So now we know, hey, you went to this camp. They thought you were a little bit short for them. Here's some feedback. Well, now we know. All right. Well, we know all the schools that fit in that stratified layer of schools. Well, you're probably not good enough for those guys. So what's the next tier that we can get you to? That information is so valuable in this process. And if you are at a travel ball coach, if you're with a travel ball team who's willing to give you that information, if you can receive it, that's actually probably a pretty good place to be. Getting told what you don't want to hear doesn't mean that it's not what you should hear. And don't run to somebody who's going to tell you, hey, I can get you there. I know so-and-so at whatever ACC school, like I can get you there. They're full of shit.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's true. I mean, I would be lying to you if I was told you that never happened when I was coaching, because it has. And you generally don't take those kids, you know, but it's being able to assess that honest feedback. And I think that, you know, I'd like to think that from a travel ball standpoint that you are getting that from the vast majority of people, and especially the people who have been around for a long time. You know, if you're in an organization that has a plethora of coaches who have been around doing it for long enough, you know, they know what guys looked like at certain ages that went on to certain schools, and they can give you an honest assessment of like, hey, this is where so-and-so was and he ended up at Marist. This is where so-and-so was and he ended up at RPI. Like, they can give you that feedback. And, you know, to your point, like how you take it is, if you can't take that, then, you know, one, you need to reassess how you take the feedback. But the other side of it is college baseball might not be for you, because you're going to, if you get there, you're going to be told plenty of times things that you don't want to hear. And if you just go in the tank and you can't handle it, and it affects you in a way that is detrimental to how you can play baseball, and it's just a coach telling you like, hey, you're not good enough right now, and these are the things you need to work on, and you know, you disagree, and you know, I think I should be doing this. Well, like, it's not going to end well for you, and you're likely going to not play, and then you're likely going to end up in the transfer portal, and then you're not going to have a place to play after that because you have no stats and nobody wants to deal with it. So understanding that and working with that as you like at a younger age can set you up for a lot more success moving forward, not only in baseball, but in life. But, you know, if you're paying these organizations to help you and expose what it is that you do so that you can get recruited, like, you also need to understand, like, ask where they see you fitting in. Where do you see me playing college baseball? This is a dream of mine. This is a goal of mine. This is what I want to do. Where do I fit in? If you don't like the answer, like, I don't tell you. You know, you can't tell me you want to go, you know, you can't tell me you want to go play at Vanderbilt and, you know, you're 80 to 81. Like, I want to go play for Corbs. Like, okay, watch them on TV. There's not a dude on that roster that throws 81 miles an hour. He's crafty, though. He can really spin it, and he locates. Yeah, that's great.
So is their guy who throws 91.
Right. So have you seen the guy that throws 92 with an 89 mile an hour slider? Like, yeah, that dude's crafty too. He throws his off speed stuff faster than you throw a fastball. Like, let's have a little bit of self-awareness here. And obviously this is a little hyperbolic, but like, you need to understand that aspect of things of like, you can't sit here and tell me that you want to go play in the SEC and you want to pitch at Florida, and then you watch Florida pitch and you're like, there's not a dude who throws under 89 miles an hour and I throw 82. Like, I don't know if Florida's in the cards for me. I mean, I can unequivocally tell you that Florida's not in the cards for you. So, you know, have that a little bit of self-awareness when it comes to that, those type of things, you know. And if you go in and you ask like, hey, you know what, here's my school list, and it's a bunch of ACC, SEC schools, and you throw 82 miles an hour, like, you're damn near delusional in thinking that you can go pitch there.
Yeah. Be careful of people who try to sell you the world and promise you all kind of stuff. Like, you want a coach who, you hand them a list and they go, here are the schools on the list that I think you fit at right now. These schools I think are a stretch. Here's why. Here's what we can do to help. Like, anybody who tells you everything you want to hear should be a red flag. Like, parents, you have to be able to step back and realize that you have to have an understanding of where your kid fits to a certain extent, which takes an education on college baseball. But don't be sold a dream because you're getting promised the world when you just don't have enough self-awareness to be like, hey, that doesn't sound right. Like, you're telling me you can get me there. Like, I know my kid's not good enough to play at that level. You know, anybody who's willing to give you an honest answer and maybe tell you something you don't want to hear, that's the guy that I would continue the conversation with, because they're probably going to be honest with you when they really need to be honest with you. If they can tell you how they can help you, but not promise you that they're going to get you a result, because there's way too many variables to be promising people. That's an organization that I think is worth time and consideration.
Yeah. The organization, hey, like, you do some good things. You use some things really well. Like, you know, I think your floor is a Division III school right now, but you know, we can continue to develop you here. Like, you could be a Division II, mid-major, Division I type guy in a couple of years if you continue to put in the work. And you know, in all of this, when we talk about travel baseball and such, like, the overarching theme here too is that you need to continue as the player to put in the work and develop as well. Like, you can go to all these tournaments, you can do all this stuff, you can play for the best teams, blah, 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 whatever. But if you're not willing to put in the time and you're not willing to kind of sacrifice and pay the price for what it is that you ultimately aspire to, you're going to be left standing out in the cold. You know, so like you have to have some skin in the game as a kid as well, that you're going to do the things it is that you're going to, that you want to do and need to do in order to get to the spot that you want to. You can't just rely on the organization and their track record and, you know, that it's just going to work out for you in the end. You need to put in the time, energy, and effort in order to get to that point as well. And when you're in good organizations, they're going to have development plans for you in order to be able to get to that point. Again, it's up to you to put in that time and effort to be able to get yourself to that spot so that you can get recruited.
100%, coach. I mean, I think, you know, just be thoughtful of the people you surround yourself with. Understand where you are in the recruiting process, because I think that's a really good place to level set, right? If you're 14, focus on the development. Focus on making sure you're around some people that can help your son get better. Focus on making sure that your son's around adults that are going to help him become a better person. You get to 16, yeah, you need to start thinking about, am I in the right places? But then again, it comes back to that self-assessment and make sure that the travel organization that you associate yourself with is going to put you in a position to be successful on the field and in the recruiting process. And if you need help with that, call us. Well,
sure will.
I promise you we'll be honest. if you can't tell from our podcast, but I think travel baseball is, it's not bad. It's like, that's not the message of this podcast. It's just it's changed. It's different. It's a different world than it was 10 years ago. Just like baseball is a different game than it was 10 years ago. It's not about throwing shade, and like, there's a lot of organizations that do awesome work. Just do your due diligence to try to find one of those and put your son in a good position, surround him with good people. And just understand how this system works so that you can use it well and make sure that you give yourself and your son a chance to succeed in this process, because it's hard enough as it is. You want to make sure you remove any of those barriers that may get in the way that you have the ability to remove from the process. So anything else you want to add, coach?
Nope.
All right. Well, thank you everybody for listening. Tune in next week for another highlight filled podcast, and we'll talk to you then. Thanks everybody. Thank you for listening this week. If you're watching on YouTube, go ahead and hit that subscribe button and smash that like button for us. Check us out on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, as well as Spotify. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at EMD Baseball. If you want to find out what me and Keith do to help families and players navigate the recruiting process, go ahead and check us out on EMDBaseball.com. Take a few minutes to check out our new online academy. I promise you'll get some good information out of that. Thanks again for listening. Check in with you next week.